Welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G. And I'm joined tonight by the man working the sound effects, Agent 70.
What's up?
Dirt, a.k.a. Stud Monkey, may or may not be joining us tonight. He just got back in town from taking the family, I guess, on a little short mini vacation to the, I call it the wilderness, but I guess they went to a cabin or something. But if he decides to join, we'll pull him into the show.
I'm down.
Check out his website, popculturenetwork.com. And check out my website, TheClickNation.com, to listen and watch previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles, read previous comic book reviews, previews, and much more. Also, follow the Twitter account at TheClickNation. Like the Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/TheClickNation. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, YouTube.com/TheClickNation, and also subscribe to iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Just search for TheClickNation. Put us in your circles on Google Plus. Just search for TheClickNation. And of course, also join the community, TheClickNation community. And if you ever have any email you want to have read on a future show, send that on over to TheClickNation@gmail.com. Now, so if you joined us, or if you tuned in to last night's show, you know that we interviewed Mastin Gioffo, who are creating comic books for Marvel Infinite Comics and also on Thrillbent. So it was a great time. It was, you know, nice getting to pick the brains of people actually in the industry, people making moves. So you can go back and if you missed the show, you can go back and watch it on TheClickNation.com or YouTube.
You guys definitely need to go out and check that out. It's a great interview over the span of basically a couple of hours. We talk about everything digital comics and all the new and interesting things that what they call Turbo Comics are about to bring to the United States comic book population. It's going to be a different take on digital comics, not just panel by panel, but definitely, and not motion comics either, but definitely a form of digital comics of guided view.
Turbo readings, comics, so, as they call them.
Exactly. So definitely tune into that. Check that out on the YouTube channel. There is a link on the Click Nation website.
Yep. So since that was the main focus of the show, we decided to come back tonight so we could do our regular show talking about the news, which there's a lot of, and of course doing our comic book reviews.
Well, there's a lot of books out there too.
Oh yes. some, of course, as usual, we haven't read all of them, but
no way. There's no way.
There's no way, especially like a day or two after they all come out.
Sure. And, you know, considering that last night we were jam packed full with stuff to talk about, there's no way we're going to get to these books, you know, all these books. So bear with us, audience, loyal audience.
Yes. And thanks for tuning in if you're watching live. So let me go ahead and pull news articles up here. And some of this is going to be from stuff from last week that we didn't cover going into this week. First thing I have up is Christian Bale was, you know, rumored to be offered $50 million to reprise his role as Batman in the Man of Steel sequel.
$50 million? I did not hear that. $50
million? $50 million.
Dang.
So, and that's a rumor, apparently.
That's a lot of money to maintain continuity out there.
Yeah, and I don't know, they just need to move on from Bale and that Batman universe. Just start something new, cast a new lead man to be Batman, and start building their franchise off of him.
I'm torn because Nolan is attached to or was attached to the Man of Steel project, and sort of gave it a, you know, that darker tone. Tonally, I think the two would match if you brought in the Batman, the Bale Batman from the Dark Knight trilogy. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it fits. So I can definitely understand why their first thought would be to bring Bale back, you know, because they obviously didn't kill him off.
Yeah, and I don't know, it seems like they're, I guess the good part of doing this a tie-in crossover type movie is you start to build the larger DC universe, cinematic universe, to eventually lead to a Justice League movie.
Sure.
But if you have any opinions on that, make sure to tweet them at us and we'll read them on the show.
You got it. Get us on Twitter at TimDOG98, as you see on the screen, and at Agent_70 on Twitter. That's me.
Yep. All right. Next news article. Geoff Johns revealed the true villains behind Forever Evil. So what do you think of it?
This news dropped last week, so I'm going to have to try to remember who the real villain is. I know that the Injustice, was it the Sinister Syndicate? What do they call themselves from the other?
Crime Syndicate.
Yeah, the Crime Syndicate. That's what they call themselves. I know they're going to be involved. So.
Well, that was the big reveal.
That's the big reveal.
Mm-hmm.
Goodness gracious. Talk about, you know, it's funny, and I harped on this once before. I hate to beat a dead horse, but they wanted to try to simplify continuity, but they keep bringing in, you know, to make sure these characters stay alive. They keep bringing in these characters who just sort of complicate things.
You think it's too many characters?
I think so. But, they've had a year and a half, almost two, to get themselves established. So I guess it's not so bad.
Yeah. They were been teasing this secret society in Justice League of America. You think they would be the big bads, but now they're even upping the ante and bringing in the crime syndicate. And supposedly it's going to lead to, you know, at the fallout of Trinity War, all the big heroes are going to be quote unquote dead. And that's when the crime syndicate's going to show up to try to take over the world, and it's going to be up to the villains to try to stop them. The villains being the villains in the current DC universe.
Right.
And they're going to be led by Luthor. So you have like Luthor and Catwoman, and I think who's the, not the zombie, the big zombie type?
Solomon Grundy.
Solomon Grundy.
Born on a Monday, died on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Or something, died on a Friday or Saturday. I forget how the rhyme goes, but yeah, Solomon Grundy.
So we'll see how that goes. But supposedly, you know, like I said, Lex Luthor is going to be the big person to watch out for during the Forever Evil.
Sorry, he makes an appearance in this week's Justice League of America. So
yeah, I saw that.
They're bringing him forward very slowly.
Yeah, what's up with the side of his face?
Not sure. You know, I don't think either of us, or I don't even think Dirt has really been keeping up with Superman. So I know what was in Superman Unchained. He made an appearance in the second issue. So I don't really know what's going on with.
Yeah, it's like
with Luthor.
Apparently, I guess he. I think we might have asked. I might have asked Dirt during one of the previous episodes, and I want to say Luthor has been in jail the whole time.
Hmm.
Because he hasn't really been used in the Superman books yet. They've been kind of holding off on him.
Right. Saving him for this.
Yeah. And let's see. More Justice League related news. So Justice League 3000 was announced a couple months ago. And it's from the creative team of Giffen, DeMatteis, and Kevin Maguire. We're going to be working together. Giffen and Matteis. Hopefully I'm sure I'm saying that wrong, but
DeMatteis.
Yeah, they were going to be the writers and Maguire was going to do art, but then DC decided to remove Maguire from art because they wanted more of a dark and gritty tone. And I think Kevin Porter was named to be taken.
Oh, Howard Porter?
Howard Porter. Yeah.
Right.
To be doing the art instead. And I guess of course, as these things go with DC, the lines of communication between editorial and the talent wasn't good because Maguire seemed to have no idea why he was removed or even being removed in the first place. It seemed like a shock to him.
Right. He was quick on the trigger with Twitter. And yeah. I believe he tweeted out a couple of tweets that definitely showed that he was in shock.
And I even wrote an article on the website about it, the whole situation, because like I said, this again, DC, and if you're gonna let someone go, let them go, but at least communicate it a little better.
Absolutely.
At least that's what I'd say about it. But and then Maguire went on the Bleeding Cool, I think Bleeding Cool forums, and sort of wrote an article explaining the whole situation. And he was saying how he even turned down a gig with writing the X book with Brian Bendis to do the Justice League 3000 book because, you know, Justice League 3000, you know, that's a big title. It will get his name back sort of on readers' minds.
On the map, yeah.
Put him back on the map again. And once the news came out that he was let go, Brian Bendis sort of he reached out to him on Twitter and then eventually he announced that that Bendis was going to bring Maguire onto I think like issue 9 or 10 of Guardians of the Galaxy to do art,
right?
And it'll probably more than likely lead to more projects. So I was glad to see he at least found another series to write because to draw because he was saying that DC was offering him like some little one shot books here and there, but nothing like steady. And he was kind of feeling bad, not bad, but he was saying, you know, he wanted something steady.
Sure.
So, sure. And also bringing up J.M. DeMatteis, he's going to be taking over as new writer on Justice League Dark. So another dark and gritty book.
Justice League Dark. Oh, mercy.
Yeah.
That's funny. I don't know if I've read more than one issue, and only because of this crossover that's going on.
And that's the only reason why.
Yeah, only for this academic review purpose, man. Only for that. What else you got?
More DC news. Brett Booth was announced as a new artist on Batman Superman in November, and he'll be doing rotating arcs with Jay Lee.
That's good news. That'll keep that story going. I'm presuming that Greg Pak probably has that book ready to roll script-wise, but the art, you know, especially with Jay Lee, definitely, you know, he definitely needs an arc or two off. You know, alternating arcs definitely is probably the best way to work his style and his schedule in.
Right.
So I'm glad to hear that.
And Pak will craft the story to fit the artist. So Booth will be more action-packed stories, and he'll save sort of the darker tones.
The stories. Moody stuff.
Yeah, the moody stuff for Jay Lee. For this. Sure. Anyway, they announced that the first issue Brett Booth does is going to have – they're doing it in the vertical or the horizontal style.
Right.
So switching it up.
Yeah, it's a gimmick that's, you know, been used here and there. I've definitely bought a couple of those horizontal books. You know, I think we both have a couple of those books in our collection. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see.
Probably.
Sure, I can remember, you know, McFarlane Spidey way back when.
Oh yeah.
And you know, with the X-Force crossover, and there was a couple of Uncanny issues that were sideways like that. So it's definitely been done here and there. You know, it's a once in a blue moon type gimmick. We'll put it that way. What else you got?
Guardians of the Galaxy San Diego Comic-Con video footage was leaked online.
I saw it. It wasn't bad looking.
Nope. It was. It got a lot of people sort of excited for it.
Sure, sure. It definitely looked. It definitely looks interesting.
So there was footage of a raccoon shooting a gun and with his mouth open. You saw Drats and Peter Quill.
Mm-hmm.
And just quick little bits, nothing prolonged. So
right. Well, you could definitely see Dave Bautista, you know, former WWE superstar, you know, carrying, you know, a lot of upper body strength in that shot, carrying a lot of muscle.
Yeah. And I think I remember seeing like a quick shot of Gamora.
I think so.
It was like from the back though, so didn't see, couldn't really make out Zoe Saldana, who's playing her. Next up, this new Sci-Fi Channel Sci-Fi Channel announced a new reality show called Fangasm.
Really?
Where they take like 12 geeks and put them in a house, and like they're gonna work some Stan Lee comic convention, I think.
Really? You know, there's not gonna be any kind of real world style sex going on.
Oh no, it's just them in a house arguing about Dungeons and Dragons and Star Wars against Star Trek.
Oh my goodness.
So
maybe they'll surprise us. Maybe they'll surprise us.
And I know TBS had a geek show last year, a reality show.
It was more of a game show, right?
Yeah, you had to compete and people got voted off. So I don't believe that anyone's getting voted off at this show. It's just, I think, the people living in the house and then trying to work at the Stan Lee comic convention.
Okay. Interesting.
Matt Fraction.
Will you watch it? Will you watch it?
Yeah, if I remember when exactly it's coming out.
I might give it a shot. We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
Listeners, you let us know if you want to watch it. Tweet us. Let us know.
Let us know. And Matt Fraction is stepping away from both Fantastic Four books to focus more on the Inhuman book he's going to be writing for the Inhumanity sort of event. Or I don't know if it's an event, called an event, just what's going to become spilling out of Infinity.
He's probably what it sounds like to me is. He's taking more of an active role in setting up where the Marvel Universe is going to be, not just the Inhumanity book or the Inhumans book that he's going to be working on. You know, it's supposed to be it's not exactly a crossover, but more like a lot of different things have to be happening in these, you know, in all the Marvel books to reflect this Inhumanity storyline. So it sounds to me like he's got more of a role in communicating with all the different writers. That's why he has to take time off from these two books.
Mm-hmm.
But to be perfectly honest, you know, we all know that his Fantastic Four hasn't been any great shakes, and FF, you know, is only okay. And I've recently dropped both of them, so with any luck, they'll wrap up the storylines that have been dragging on in those two books and take it into a fresh direction.
Yep. And also, so Carl Kessel is going to take over writing for Fantastic Four, and Mike Allred's brother, I think Larry Allred, I think that's his first
name.
Was
it Lee Allred?
Or Lee.
Right.
Is taking over writing for FF. And I think I remember seeing Mike Allred said his last issue of FF would be number 16. So even he's going to be leaving.
Sure.
And I wonder if Mark Bagley is staying on to do art on FF, because I know he's also doing that Cataclysm ultimate event that comes out of Hunger. Him and Mark Bagley and Brian Bendis are
right.
Teaming back up again to probably put an end to the Ultimate World.
Right, we'll see what Bagley does. You're probably right. There's probably going to be more fill-in artists on Fantastic Four while that's going on. So, actually, I don't even think Bagley did this week's issue. I have to take a look real quick. Give me one second. I'll let you know. It is Bagley penciling. Yes, he did do it. I read this pretty quickly, so I don't recall noticing that it was Bagley's art, but it's definitely Bagley art now that I look at it again. So we're up to issue number 11, so there's still a couple of issues left before the full change. So we'll see where the art chores go.
All right. And I think I have one other... two more news bits. I guess since we're talking about the Ultimate Universe, earlier this week, Marvel came out with their November solicits, and there was some little nuggets to be taken from it, most notably them plainly saying Miles Morales was heading to this Marvel 616 universe.
Definitely.
And all the Ultimate books are on hiatus in November because they have Cataclysm books to take their place, like Ultimate Comics, Spider-Man, Cataclysm, or Last Stand, or whatever name they're giving them. Right. And like Ultimate X-Men, Cataclysm. So...
Hey, did you have a chance to take a look at Newsarama put up a post?
The stuff taken away. Yeah, I always look at that.
Oh, I didn't have a chance to look at that yet, so I'm going to click through that. So what else you got, Tim?
What was that?
What else do you have for news?
Oh, the last thing, more from the solicits, is Avengers Arena is coming to an end, but they at least tease that something else may be taking its place.
Right. They tease that something, it's probably going to launch into something new soon after. Yeah. Also coming out of the Marvel solicits is that there are no new issues of Captain Marvel or Venom solicited for November 2013. Mm-hmm. So there's no news right now whether or not these are cancellations or just series that are being paused. So, you know, we're left to speculate. So, you know, I'm hoping that neither of these two, despite the fact that I don't think either of us have been giving Captain Marvel and Venom very good reviews as of late, I don't think they really deserve to be chopped on the chopping block just yet.
I doubt Venom's ending. They just introduced his sidekick Mania.
Right.
So.
Right. There's a couple more things from the Marvel solicits that they mentioned. There's a future event that they're seeding with. There's an Infinity the Hunt limited series, and they're going to use that to possibly seed a future Marvel event. So I guess we're going to have to take a look at that when it comes out.
Yeah, one event after another.
All right. Phil Jimenez is doing Savage Wolverine, which is cool. And Nova is going to become Nova 100, not Nova number 10.
Well, I think it's still the issue 10.
Right. What's going to be issue number 100?
Yeah.
I guess of the overall Nova series, I'm not really sure how that works.
New Warriors will be guest starring.
Right. Matt Fraction is going to be plotting only on FF and F4. So I guess he is going to still have a say in where the story goes. Let's see. Oh, Lord. X-Men Gold. It's a one-shot, it looks like. But Chris Claremont's on board to do this. Chris Claremont, Bob McLeod, Stan Lee, Walt Simonson, Louise Simonson, and Fabian Nicieza are working on this one-shot book for in celebration of the X-Men's 50th anniversary, X-Men Gold number 1. So that'll be interesting to see. And like you said, Miles Morales into the Marvel Universe.
Yep.
Some interesting stuff, interesting stuff. I have one bit of Image news. I know we don't pay attention to this particular book that much, but Savage Dragon has some kind of major news coming out. Hold on. We got to get that spoiler alert bell. Spoiler alert, spoiler alert. If you have not been reading Savage Dragon, apparently Eric Larson is getting ready to kill off his childhood created superhero. His own personal creation in issue 192 is about to kill him off. And the Dragon's son is going to be taking over the role around issue 193. So that's coming up very soon within the... you know, this fall, early winter. So be on the lookout for that.
Yep.
If anyone's interested in Savage Dragon, I haven't read that in years.
I started like 5 issues ago, and then I haven't read like the last 2 or 3, but I'll catch up this weekend.
Sure. And it, my understanding is that he's been convicted of, or he's going to be convicted of murder, or he's in trouble for something.
Yeah, so, back from when he got possessed by his like evil side or whatever.
Oh, okay, okay.
That's and the good thing about the Savage Dragon universe is the character actually everyone ages. So when a year goes by in real lifetime, a year has gone by in their books. That's why. It's been 21 years. It's been out 21 years. That's why he has a son, Malcolm, I guess, who's like 21 or late teens. About to graduate high school.
Gotcha. All right. There's a lot about this character that I didn't know. I inherited a good run, a nice chunk of Savage Dragon comics I had never gotten around to reading. So I may have to see how that fits into the current continuity.
Yep.
All righty.
All right.
That was a lot of news this week.
Yeah, we got through it quick, though, which is good.
That's cool.
Now we can get on to some comic book reviews.
Sounds good.
And I want to mention Boom Studios. They had Six Gun Gorilla number 3 of 6 came out. I haven't had a chance to read it yet.
I didn't read it. I also wanted to read Hero Bear and the Kid Inheritance number 1. But I didn't get a chance to get my hands on that. So hopefully next week I'll have a chance to read it.
Okay. I miss having Dirt here so he could put the covers up as we were talking. Do his little nice flip through. Let's see. So that's Boom. Also mentioned Deathmatch number 8 came out and Grace Randolph Superbia number 10. I read the first couple issues of Superbia, but then I had to give it up.
Why is that? Just wasn't.
It was. I liked it that it had the sort of, what do you want to call it? It was sort of like a soap opera in a comic, but then I was still missing the action portion of it. I needed some fights, and yeah. The first couple of issues there weren't any.
Gotcha.
Let's see, Dark Horse. They had, I haven't read any of the Dark Horse books yet, but I will mention the Halo Initiation number 1 of 3, the first Halo series to be with Dark Horse. That looks at least interesting enough to check out.
Definitely. I flipped through the first couple of pages, so I'm definitely going to try to read that and see if that's worth keeping up with.
Yeah, it's a 3-issue limited series. I figure I could give it that much of my time.
Sure.
Savage Dra- or Star Wars number 8 and X number 4 both came out. I haven't actually read any of these X books, but at least it's super, supposedly it's a superhero book, so I'll give that a shot.
Okay.
DC, you're reading the Astro City books, right?
Yes. This is actually close to the top of my reading pile. So I read Astro City number 3. This is a phenomenally well done book. I can't recommend this enough.
Is the art good in it?
Yes. Yes. The art by, I believe it's Brent Anderson in this book. He's the regular artist on Astro City. With Kurt Busiek writing, let me just double check real quick. And but in any event, the story revolves around an honor guard. You know, this is like their version of the Justice League or the Avengers. They have a hotline, and the storyline revolves around an operator on the hotline who gets involved with one of the cases that calls in, and it's interesting. You know, what she does is heroic on a very plain, you know, street human level. And, you know, it goes into how she takes action to maybe fix a mistake she may have made. And it's just really well done. I can't recommend it enough. Astro City is only on issue number 3. To anyone out there, this is the time to jump into this book and read it. You don't need to know anything about the history of the characters. You just need to read this book because it is that good.
Okay. I need to still get caught up.
Sure. And it's, hold on, where is this? Where's this title page? I'm looking for the title page. Just want to make sure that Brent Anderson is doing, yes, he is doing the art. Brent Anderson with an Alex Ross cover.
Hmm. Haven't heard of Brent Anderson. That doesn't say much.
It's very good. It's very good. The art is definitely super heroic.
Okay.
Batgirl?
Batgirl 2030.
You have a chance to read this?
No, I don't read Batgirl. Okay. I like the cover. The cover looked cool.
Yes, the cover did look cool.
You reading it?
I tried. I looked at it for academic review purposes. I may try to read it, but you know, it's hard. It's not nearly as high up on the list as Astro City. To you know, it's not first on that list to read. You know.
Right. Okay.
One of the ones that's supposed to be, you know, up near the top of the list is Batman. Did you read this week?
Yeah, I read it today.
What do you think?
It was. I had to try to remember what happened last issue, but I mean, as far as setting up, you know, setting the stage for Bruce to become Batman, it was nice. The Greg Capullo art was awesome. I think the art was a lot better than the story, because
yes,
the story. I mean, there wasn't much of a story.
Yes, no, you beat me to the punch. Basically, my notes remind me that it's just another installment in Zero Year, going back to the beginning of this version of Batman's origin. Mm-hmm. So the Red Hood and his gang lay a beating on Bruce Wayne, and Alfred patches him up. That's pretty much what happens. Mm-hmm. And basically, like, the last half of the book is a slightly different take on how Bruce gets the inspiration for the bat motif. You know, it's so overwrought. You know, it's like page after page, like, oh, I'll be a bat. You know, like, after, you know,
I understand with the whole whatever that ball he had that turned the room into like a cave.
Oh no! What? That was the ball that was like a digital imaging thing, mm-hmm, that he dropped.
Where'd he get it from?
That was something that his father invented.
Oh, okay.
If you go back to the first issue of Zero Year, remember when he was I don't remember the scene. You know, like, it was around that scene where they were working on an old car. If you recall.
I don't remember that, but
When you go back and when you go back and flip through, you'll remember, you'll see a scene where they're talking about this sphere that they can use to like image tunnels and stuff. You know, it'll kind of float around, kind of like I hate to use this bad movie, but do you remember in Prometheus?
Mm.
They had those spheres that floated around, mapping out the walls.
Oh yeah,
the tunnels, pretty much just like that.
Oh okay.
So they show that, and that's how they map out the caves underneath the Wayne Manor.
Hmm. Oh, so it just saved all the data from underneath Wayne Manor and then displayed it.
Exactly, and revealed to him what was down there.
So that was basically the story, like you said.
Bruce and it was just exactly
the crap up.
He had his butt whooped. He had a can of ass whooping. You know, someone opened up a can on him, like Stone Cold, stomped a mud hole in him.
Stone Cold.
So, what's next?
Anything else we're missing in that?
No, I don't think so. I mean, the Riddler is still in the background pulling strings, literally pulling strings.
Yeah.
You know, I hit the drum and the snare because I hit the drum and the snare because if you're reading this, you know exactly what I mean by pulling the strings.
And we just getting the message that Doug or Dirt is up from a nap. We'll see if he actually feels like joining us tonight or not.
We'll see.
That's about it for Batman, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Did you have a chance to read Green Lantern Core?
I have not. Did you?
Nope. Sad. Let me see what's in it. Is it more Icon? No, what is it? What is this bad guy's name again? I forget. Is it Icon?
Relic.
Relic. Something short. Yeah, is it more Relic? No, wait, is it? Without a ring?
Is Relic in it?
Probably.
I also want to quickly mention Demon Knights, number 23, was its last issue.
Hmm.
So, rest in peace, Demon Knights, Etrigan, and whoever else was in that series.
Oh, stud monkey.
he won't be joining us, but...
No, he won't be joining us. Although he should be guest starring on a certain reality TV show on the Discovery Channel, which shall remain nameless. what do we have next? Oh, Justice League of America, number 7. Justice
League of America, Trinity War tie-in.
Yep.
It was... All right, to me.
It was a lot of bluster.
Nothing really happened in it, in my opinion. I mean, the story was advanced, but nothing that jumps out at me, really.
Yeah, I mean...
I had to try to remember what happened previously. It seemed like it's been too long between the main series books.
And the crossover books.
Right.
I mean... You know, there's a couple of cool scenes where I don't know any of these characters because I'm not a DC guy, but Dr. Psycho is, you know, caught red-handed in the middle of some experimenting with some innocent folks, and, you know, Superman busts in, and there's all sorts of mind control stuff that Martian Manhunter has to do and basically breaks into Dr. Psycho's mind to find out if he had anything to do with Superman killing Dr. Light. Spoiler alert. And actually, the one thing, the one part of the story that I thought was funny and interesting was that Adam lets the cat out of the bag, and she reveals to members of both teams that she was planted on the Justice League by Amanda Waller.
Mm-hmm.
And the story ends with one of the heroes gaining control of Pandora's box. Or is it Pandora's box gaining control of one of the heroes? We'll see in the next tie-in issue.
Yeah.
We'll see. So that's that.
Nightwing 23, I haven't had a chance to read yet. That was actually as next on it was next on my list after I finished Justice League of America.
I'm not going to talk about it because I know you want to read it. I tried reading it. It was a tough read, mostly because I just don't care about where the story's going. But I'll try to read it again because the art looked nice at least. So I'm just not a fan of where the story's going, to be perfectly honest. That probably prejudiced my, you know, jaundiced my eye a little bit before I even started reading, you know?
I'm a Nightwing fan, so I'm definitely going to read it. And I like Will Conrad on art.
Mm-hmm. It's not bad. It's pretty good. It's pretty good. It's pretty good. Superboy 23, anybody? Bueller?
Same with Suicide Squad. I think that was Alex Cott's last issue for that.
Oh, man. We should at least take, we should at least look at it for academic review purposes. all right. What else? World's Finest 15, anybody? Jeez. All righty. What's next? Dynamite? Anybody?
Let's see if there's anything to mention. Red Sonja number 2.
All right. Battlestar Galactica number 3.
Shadow Green Hornet Dark Knights number 2 of 5.
Hmm.
Okay. Getting some more spinoff books for Green Hornet.
Sure. And Vampirella Southern Gothic number 1 of 5.
All right. Now, IDW. Let's see. They got Doctor Who number 12. G.I. Joe Special Missions number 6. Half Past Danger number 4 of 6. I was trying to read Half Past Danger, but I couldn't. I read one issue and I never kept up with it after that. Star Trek number 24, Thunder Agents number 1. Now that is on my reading list for this weekend. Supposedly it's, you know, a new number 1 superhero book.
I read a review
of it on Newsarama. They didn't like it, but I'm still kidding. Give it a try. I forget what gripes they had about it.
Oh, that's too bad. I don't, you know, the Thunder Agents has been around for a long time. I don't recall ever reading any previous versions of it, so I don't know if it's a good property or not. Couldn't tell you.
Next up we have, and X-Files Season 10, number 3.
Anybody, Bueller? Image. There's a lot of stuff from Image here that I don't think I read. How about you, Tim?
I've read, well, let's see, what did I read from Image?
East of West, number 5?
I haven't got to it yet.
Okay.
But I will. Ghost number 2 is out, but I said I'm going to go back and read number 1 before I read this one. So,
okay.
And that's a new series from Josh Williamson where it's sort of like Ocean's 11 meets Ghosts, pretty much. Where like a heist group is put together when they have to go into a haunted house and steal a ghost.
Okay.
And I'm watching this Braves and Nats are tied. Boo.
No sympathy for me. The Metsies are out on the West Coast playing San Diego. It hasn't even started yet.
Okay, back to books. Las Vegas number 4 of 4. Mind the Gap number 12. I'm going to try to read that also.
Okay.
Because Mind the Gap, I don't know, that's another one of those Image books I've heard a few good things about. So I want to see what the real word is. Saga number 13. So I read my first Saga book, and it was this.
Hold on. No, not a laugh. The first Saga book read by Tim D-O-double-G.
It seemed like the perfect time since they had been on hiatus for a couple months and now they're coming back with the new, starting a new story arc. It actually read pretty new reader friendly.
Okay.
So that's pretty cool. Will I be able to describe what happened in it? The main couple who have the kid, they're, I guess, still on the run, and they go to a planet, and they have, like, the main man, the main male's grandmother or mother is with them, and they're going to look for an author of some kind of book. That's what they're looking for.
Okay.
And they find him, and of course, he's not everything they thought he was going to be. Just like every writer, supposedly. It's like something like that's like in what's the word I'm looking for? Inferred or
inferred?
I don't know what I'm saying. It's a like the whole thing about the writer not being what they thought he was going to be. He didn't live up to their expectations.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Like most writers is what the point they were trying to get across.
I see.
And of course, we talked about Savage Dragon number 190 is out.
Right. I didn't read it, but I definitely know where the storyline's going.
Only 3 more issues until the Flash or the Savage Dragon's end, apparently.
And a new beginning. A new beginning.
Ending and beginnings.
Got it. All righty.
And Walking Dead number 113.
Right, which is still continuing big crossover. I mean, not big crossover, this big storyline.
And another thing, this morning, I saw a couple of Image books already are sold out at the distributor level. East of West number 5, Saga 13, and Walking Dead number 113. Mm-hmm. So they're already going into second printings.
Wow. Good for them. Yeah.
Big week for Image.
Good for them.
Now we go to Marvel.
And surprise, surprise, even I haven't read enough Marvel this week. Marvel, there's so much out there.
I always at least get through the Marvel stuff. So I can, there will be stuff here I can talk about.
All right, let's roll. Astonishing
X-Men number 65 is not one of them because I don't read that.
I read it. I wanted to see where it was going.
Did it go anywhere?
Not really. You would think that Iceman getting being powered up by an apocalypse death seed and basically freezing the entire world would have more ramifications outside of Astonishing X-Men, but it doesn't.
Yeah.
Thor gets punked in this, which is kind of annoying. And it's basically about Bobby Drake having problems adjusting to growing up life and kind of growing up. And I can sympathize with that. But, it wasn't all that interesting. And I don't think they really needed to do this big storyline to talk about it. But, there's this many X-Men and there's this many X-Books, they have to focus on somebody in these books. Not every book is about Cyclops and Wolverine, right?
And I like how they're now all of a sudden the big thing is to utilize death seeds.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a Deus Ex Machina.
What does that mean?
Oh,
I've seen it before. I just never knew what that meant.
It's like a out of story element that kind of drops in and changes, and is either revealed to be behind everything or changes everything. Mm. So, it's just more, it's a story mechanism that a lot of authors use. So they use this, apocalypse death seed to start all sorts of shenanigans, it's moved a lot of storylines forward. So, alrighty, what have we got next?
Next, Avengers Arena number 13. I did read.
What do you think?
Had a guest writer on board. I forget. Was it Christos Gage?
I think. Oh, was it Christos Gage?
Yeah, he's the one that wrote Avengers Academy, right?
I believe so. Yes.
Yeah, I believe that was him then that filled in writing. But it sort of picks up, of course, with the Avengers Arena campus, and Hank Pym is going out trying to figure out what happened to all these kids who just sort of disappeared.
Right, and Mr. Smart Guy can't figure it out, even though the clues are right in front of his freaking face.
Well, no, because they, Arcade's a smart little devil.
It's just so frustrating that Hank Pym is supposed to be, like, what, the fourth smartest guy in the world, and he's being outsmarted by Arcade. Is just so, you know, it's so frustrating to see. You know, but it's kind of cool that at least they took some time out to kind of show what the reaction is. Like, why doesn't anyone come looking for them, right? Mm-hmm. That's pretty much what this issue is supposed to take care of. And I'm sure if anyone out there has been reading Avengers Arena, it's probably crossed your mind at least once. It's like, where's the cavalry? You know, where the supposed teachers at these schools that all these students got plucked from? Why aren't they coming to look for them? And this issue shows why.
And a lot of guest stars.
Definitely. You know, I believe it's Wolverine in this book that talks about how a lot of the characters that were targeted that are part of Avengers Arena were kind of the vulnerable ones. You know, they made for a specific type of target for a would-be kidnapper. So it's kind of interesting to see that, you know, this is the common thread that they all have that we may not have picked up on right away as the, you know, as the reader.
And let's see, Deadpool number 14. Haven't been keeping up with Deadpool. I think I remember hearing Iron Fist and Luke Cage, or I guess, guest starred in it. I think they were in the last issue too.
Okay. I mean, I'll try to pick it up and read it this weekend just to see where it's going.
I'm waiting for the art where Wolverine and Captain America guest in it. It's like a weapon. They're doing like weapon plus
program,
something like that.
All right, that'll be interesting to read. You know, they really developed the Weapon Plus program. You know, with Grant Morrison. You know, Phantom X is part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Captain America was a precursor to the Weapon. You know, he was a retroactively made Weapon One.
Okay. Fantastic Four number 11.
No, I read this.
Oh, you did. Okay.
I read it because I love the characters, and you know, for academic review purposes, right?
Right.
The story just drags on. It's more time travel shenanigans. I can't complain enough about the time travel shenanigans in this book. You know, there's a lot of good character work that Fraction does in this book. I believe that Fraction does this book on his own. I don't think that he has any co-writers on this until the next issue, but I could be wrong. I'd have to take a look. But ultimately, there's a lot of good character work amongst the family, which is always one of the important draws, one of the important points in any Fantastic Four book. But the overall storyline is just dragging on and on. They're looking for this cure for their conditions where the Fantastic Four are slowly deteriorating and, you know, possibly their powers are killing them or they're losing their powers or it's going haywire. So, you know, we need to get to some sort of resolution in that. It can't be taking this long. It's too long. Even the Thor, you know, like one of my favorite books this week, even the Thor storyline ended and this FF storyline is still going on.
I did like the cover to the FF, the Fantastic Four with the thing like bench pressing something on his back. I think that's what the cover had. Do you remember?
I don't remember. Now you're going to make me click on it. Give me one second.
It has like dinosaurs in the back.
No, that might be a different cover. They're being sucked through a time warp thing.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's a future issue. Maybe that's the cover that people just kept using for the when they're doing their post about Fraction leaving.
Right. I think I know what you're talking about. It might be in the solicits for maybe not November, but October or September. So, okay.
Next up, we have, go back, Fearless Defenders number 8.
You did read it. I was trying to read it just as we were starting the show. What did you think of it,
Tim? It was all right. I don't know. It seemed kind of, the pacing seemed weird in it.
I noticed that they were trying to introduce more female heroes into this mix.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a guest star that pops up very early on, Elsa Bloodstone.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of cool to see, like, the next wave characters are being reintegrated into the Marvel Universe, like Spectrum / Photon / Monica Rambeau is going to be in the Mighty Avengers. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of cool that some of the next wave characters are being brought back in.
And, you know, more of the dynamic between Valkyrie and Annabelle Riggs.
Right.
Some of the art was kind of off too. Like some of the fight sequences, like limbs or legs being in weird positions.
But you know what? What I noticed is that this particular artist is pretty good at facial expressions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
Will Slaney.
Right. And Will Slaney's art. I think there's a real stress. There's a real emphasis on the facial expressions in this book and how they're supposed to be, you know, how they use that to convey emotion and surprise and all that stuff. So he's good at that. I didn't really see the panels and the frames that you were talking about, but I'll be on the lookout for it now to look for some awkwardly posed legs or arms.
Yeah, it was in the panels where fighting was taking place, and a lot of like bodies were there.
Gotcha. I'll be on the lookout for that.
Infinity number 1 of 6, Marvel's
okay.
Big event.
This is the big release of the week. I'm pretty sure you read it, right?
Yes, I did, and also reviewed it.
Oh, okay. I missed that. So, do you want to talk about your review? Or should I jump right into what else?
I mean, you can go ahead.
All right. The very first things I typed out were poor Galador. Poor Galador. But in an interview on CBR, Hickman says that we will see survivors of Galador and its space knights later in the series. Basically, in Infinity, the stage is set for the Builders, you know, wreaking a path of destruction and heading straight for Earth. And the Avengers are heading off to try to head them off at the pass. Meanwhile, Thanos is plotting a parallel plan to obtain something powerful on Earth. You know, they tease that it's probably not the Infinity Gauntlet again.
Yeah, that they've run that into the ground, with, at least as far as Thanos goes.
Right. So there's a scene where they basically show the destruction of the Infinity Gems in this reality. So maybe Thanos isn't looking for that for them this time around.
And I like the use of the chapters by Hickman, something that he's been doing in his books for a while, at least like the whole, you know, one page, at least intros, like just blank page, except with maybe like a word on there.
Mm-hmm.
But he used it to split up the book into different chapters. So like when one story ended, to jump to the next one. So it give you a break so you can tell the story's changing or changing locations.
Right. Definitely. I appreciate that. So we have some feedback tonight. We do have some listeners and viewers today. Roddy Cat has tweeted, now we just need a next wave book. And also, shout out to Firestorm and Nuclear Valkyrie.
I didn't get that joke at first. Firestorm, the DC character.
Exactly. And he also, and also, Roddy Cat writes, Infinity number 1 had the Space Knights in it. Infinity number 2 will have, wait, spoilers. Buzz Lightyear. uh, because it is a space story after all. You know, I'm happy to see, you know, I was happy to see the Space Knights sort of go out in a blaze of glory. It was nice that
are the Space Knights just robots?
No, if you go back and read,
are there people inside those, the metal shell or something?
Partially. They're more cyborg than like an armored suit. You know, the old storyline went, the old ROM books that explained it like this. Basically, they were merged with these metal, with these metal suits, and their bodies were stored on the home planet. So there's always a chance to kind of take the consciousness out of the Space Knight armor and put it back into the body. But you know, lots of different things happen to make the Space Knights more permanent. And like I believe at one point all their bodies were destroyed, so they were all stuck in their Space Knight armor. You know, the folks who had undergone the transformation process to become Space Knight. But I was very happy to see the Space Knights go out in a blaze of glory, and I want to see them, you know, utilized. ROM obviously can't be used because of legal issues and licensing and prop, you know, and who owns the intellectual property. But you know, it was, you know, I'm happy to see them used. It kind of sucks that they're cannon fodder, you know, it really does.
Yeah, that puts off a bunch of people online.
Yeah, but you know, I'm glad to see that Hickman is keeping the fans in mind and is going to be bringing in Space Knights again soon. I hope. But I like this book. You know, it was a good launching point for a big event, I think.
Jim Chung's art was nice as always.
Yes,
agreed. Glad I got to meet him and get some autographs and some two sketches from him at MegaCon in March.
He's a very cool guy.
And I like how the recap page at the beginning, well, it wasn't beginning because it came like one third of the way through the book because there's so many pages.
That's right.
I counted 53 characters on the recap page.
That's funny.
That 53 is funny. People. That's a lot.
That is. I didn't even count. I just saw that and flipped right past it. That's funny. That is funny. Look at that. Look at that cast of characters, man.
Yeah, man. You got the Inhumans, the Space Knights, the Builders, the Planters, the Cedars, Avengers.
The Illuminati. That's funny.
Too many.
Inhumans, Thanos, Skrulls. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, Skrulls. And they just got beat up for eating pizza. Skrulls can't enjoy a pizza.
Yeah, seriously. Sism.
Let's see. I'm mentioning Superior Spider-Man Team Up number 2 and Scarlet Spider number 20 because they tied into each other. The sibling rivalry. I think that's named the crossover.
Okay.
Yeah, sibling rivalry between Superior Spider-Man and Kane, aka the Scarlet Spider. So it starts off in the first part is in Superior Spider-Man Team Up number 2, where I'm trying to remember how it started. Oh, Kane decides to go to New York to check on Peter, and he's just like waiting in Peter's apartment for him. And of course, Doc Ock is the one in Spider-Man's body now, and Kane killed Dr. Octopus at one point, and he knows that's Kane underneath the mask because he has Spider-Man's memory. So they start fighting, and they're fighting on the streets. And during the fight, some clones start attacking them, and eventually they get defeated and captured by a Jackal, and which takes the story over to Scarlet Spider number 20, which had great artwork from what's the guy's name? Hold on, let me scroll down because I was talking to someone about it earlier today. In-Hyuk Lee. It was a painted style.
Yeah, I was about to say, it looks like I'm regretting not reading this. I'm going to have to read this tonight or tomorrow.
Yeah, he did a really great job. I'm assuming it's a he. But I guess supposedly he was filling in. So hopefully he comes back again. And there was like two prologues at the end of the book, sort of teasing stuff to come. Oh yeah, they had a clone of Gwen Stacy, which like that hasn't been done before. And the Jackal had stolen, when they were captured, Jackal had taken some of Peter's blood because, you know, Peter's he's sort of like Mr. Sinister, and how Mr. Sinister loves the Summers DNA. Bloodline. Yes. Peter's the pure one, so he has to try to get his DNA, but they ended up destroying it in the fire when they escaped, but Jackal still has some of Kane's. So something devious will be done with that. No doubt.
Interesting. I'm gonna have to read this. You make it sound very interesting. So
Scarlet Spider is fun.
Definitely like gonna be reading this.
And I like Superior, at least what's coming up in Superior Spider-Man Team Up, because it seems like since he was let on or put on probation from the Avengers, he's, you know, forming his own super team, and it's the Sinister Six, his own cohorts. So in like some of the solicits, they show them on the cover. So I just want to see how that's gonna go over with the general public. You know, Spider-Man working with these former villains, building his own team, super team. Mm-hmm. So I got through both of those. Secret Avengers number 7. I haven't read yet.
I haven't read it either.
And I'm kind of into the whole series. Eventually, I'll give it up, I think, but.
I'm a fan of the espionage and all that stuff. I am Agent underscore 70 after all, but you know, it's starting to kind of meander. I hope that this issue is good. I have to give it a shot and see where it goes. You know, I'm starting to think that maybe it's one too many Avengers books right now, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, and then Mighty Avengers has come in.
Right. I did see something on Twitter while we were doing the show that apparently there's been some reports that Mighty Avengers has been under-ordered.
Yeah, I read that article. I still have it up in my tab here.
So, you know, I don't know if that's really news, but it seems, you know, I'm kind of disappointed in that. But at the same time, I think everyone's got that feeling that there's probably one to two too many Avengers books out there right now.
Well, once of course, in the solicits for number 3, there's a spider hero character that shows up who may or may not be Miles Morales.
Right.
That could bring some more readers to it.
Right. Boost that readership. We will see.
And let's see. Next up. Thor, God of Thunder, number 11, the end of the Gore saga.
Right, the God Bomb story.
Yeah, the God Bomb.
This was a fun issue to read. The art in this is phenomenal. Esad Ribic knocked this out of the park. This is, you know what, honestly, this issue was kind of anticlimactic for me. You know, the final battle didn't drag on that long. You know, there was a lot of epilogue and post epilogue type of stuff going on in the story. Mm-hmm. But it was so well done. I would definitely look forward to seeing this in a collected edition. I would recommend anyone who wants to read this, read it in a collected format, because it's such a great epic storyline and the art is so good. Can't say that enough.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed the whole saga, even though it ran long, but it was worth it.
Right. You know what's funny about that is that, you know how I was complaining before about Fantastic Four running long and it just won't end? Mm-hmm. This, like, very, very seldom. I think if we replayed all the CBCs where there was a Thor issue, we probably did say once or twice that the storyline seemed to be dragging a little bit. But I think if you read it in a collected format, I think the storyline is just moving along at a very snappy pace, and it's really well done. And I think it's just some of the middle parts fell victim to, you know, this, you know, month-to-month storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Ultimate Comics X-Men number 30?
Nope. Not here.
I know Doug's enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
Uncanny X-Force number 10? I did read it.
What'd you think?
I don't know. I'm falling off of this Uncanny X-Force book. Not saying giving it up, but I don't know. It's just the writing. I don't know. The writing was kind of weird in it. Like the way Sam Humphries was writing Bishop. Like I ain't picture him saying the stuff he was saying in it.
Hmm.
He was like freaking out over the Revenants, and the team had to fight the Revenants.
Right.
And I do like the redemption of Bishop that Sam Humphries is doing. But besides that, yeah.
Interesting. See, that's I'm glad to hear that at least that seems to be the goal of this first, you know, couple of story arcs, because I was not, or the next story arc, because I was not happy with the whole Phantom X stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I really couldn't care less about that. But, you know, if they're going to use the next story to kind of redeem Bishop and reestablish him as a character, you know, by all means, maybe I'll jump on. I'm going to have to give this issue a try and take a look at it. If that's, you know, if that's where the story's going.
Yeah, it's just, I'm not feeling it like I was originally.
All right.
Wolverine number 8. I guess this is the start of the Killable arc, which I don't care about.
I didn't
read it for those reasons.
I haven't had a chance to read it yet, just for time reasons. We just had so much going on this week that I just did not get a chance to read as many books as I wanted to. Let's see, who's doing the art on this?
Alan Davis is back, I believe.
Is he?
Yeah.
Well, at least the art is passable. If you know, it's nice to look at if Alan Davis is back on.
Yeah, his art he's not one of the artists that I'm like, oh, I need to read it because he did art. I mean, he's not bad. It's kind of just there for me.
Mm.
Blasphemy, I know.
I gotcha. Well, it looks like Black Panther's in this issue.
Yeah, because I read the last issue and they were like, next issue, guest star in Black Panther.
Okay. I'm going to give this a try because I happen to be a big fan of Alan Davis's art. So I'm going to read this issue and hopefully it'll be pretty good. I hope. Crossing my fingers. What do we got next?
Last is Wolverine the X-Men number 34, the second last part of the Hellfire
saga. Did you skip Uncanny X-Men number 10?
I did.
Oh, okay. Did you do a review of it already?
No, I just didn't see it here. Uncanny X-Men number 10.
Did you read it? I know we were just discussing it before.
I read it. Fraser Irvin was on an art, and it wasn't too bad this time. It was mostly some Homo sapiens holding pro-mutant rally, supporting Cyclops and what he's doing. And so Cyclops decides to go meet them in person. And, of course, a big, like, some former Sentinel shows up at the end to attack. Really?
It looks like there's a lot of talking in this issue.
Yeah, because they have to do stuff with Maria Hill and Magneto, who were working together. And she says she's not going to meet with them anymore. And from now on, Magneto has to communicate with their Shield's mutant liaison, which is Dazzler, who is really Mystique.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Now, see, what I'm afraid of is I'm not that enthusiastic about this, and I can't believe I'm getting ready to say this, but I'm getting ready to drop Uncanny. Can you believe that?
No, because I'm not really feeling it much either.
Oh, you're not surprised by it?
No. It's not like all new X-Men. It's like, seriously, I don't get excited to read it. Because nothing's happening in the book.
Right. And you know what's funny is I know I've said this on the show. I have a continuing run of Uncanny X-Men from before, like right in the middle of Dark Phoenix. I have a continuous run from like number one 136 or number 135 till now. And I'm thinking of dropping it, and it'll be the first time I will not be collecting Uncanny ever. That's kind of scary. You know,
I mean, collect it through Battle of the Atom at least.
Yeah, but this is making it very tough because, you know, if I'm getting to the point where I can't even review it, you know what I mean? I can't even pick it up to review it for the show. It's starting to be, you know, that's a bad sign. But I think you're right. I think I'll stick with it through Battle of the Atom, and hopefully things will be looking up from there.
Now to end with, well, at least Wolverine. From Marvel, Wolverine and X-Men number 34. I thought this was the last part of the Hellfire saga, but we have one more to go.
Yeah, it's 4 or 5.
We had the X-Men find the Hellfire school and they attack. And
I did not read this. I'm just now looking at it. That is some great art right on the first couple of pages. That's very, it's Nick Bradshaw, who's kind of like an Art Adams clone, but he's definitely evolving and creating his own style. On the second page, where there's a kind of a Voltron looking, was that an ice thing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, behind a Krakoa monster. That's pretty cool. That's a pretty cool image. So
yeah. The art is nice. Again, yeah. This is, I don't know, another X-Men book that I just haven't been feeling.
Mm.
Hopefully, whatever the fallout from Battle of the Atom will get me back excited for non-all-new X-Men books.
Gotcha.
And I guess X-Men, the female team, isn't bad. And I still like Cable and X-Force.
Right. The reason why I'm a fan of this book is that, you know, I still like the idea of the Xavier School, even though, you know, in this book it's the Jean Grey School. Yeah, I like the fact, you know, I like that dynamic. So, you know, that's one reason why I stick with this. And the fact that Nick Bradshaw is a pretty steady artist now, mm-hmm. you know, keeps the look very, very consistent on this book. And, you know, I'm not all that fond of the new Hellfire Club characters.
Nope.
But, you know, they had to refresh the Hellfire Club somehow, I guess. So, you know, I'm willing to see this through. And, you know, this is definitely higher up on the totem pole than Uncanny is right now for me. It is.
Yeah, I'd say so. Because at least they're doing stuff with their kids in this book. The kids in the Uncanny X-Men book, they're kind of just in the background.
Sure, sure.
At least we saw them training a little bit in this last issue of Uncanny X-Men.
Right, and the issue before that, you know, they were doing, you know, they were developing that character that that Dazzler visited, the guy with the gold balls.
Yes. So. That's another thing, I don't even know half these people's names.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the guy's got gold balls, but a bump.
I had some books to at least mention, even though I haven't read them yet.
What do you got?
Archer and Armstrong number 12 and Harbinger number 15.
Okay, that's Valiant.
That's it.
Well, there's one book out that I have not had a chance to pick up that I wanted to talk about. It's from Top Shelf.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you had a chance to get a review copy, and if you do, if you're able to, if you get one to me, I'd appreciate it. But if I, you know, if I just end up going to the shop this weekend to take a look at, I will. It's from Top Shelf Productions. It's March Volume 1. It's a graphic novel that details the life and times of Representative John Lewis of Georgia, who was a leader in the civil rights movement, and spoke at the March on Washington. You know, where Dr. King gave the I Have a Dream speech.
Mm-hmm.
And Representative Lewis was on the Colbert Report this week to promote it. And Representative Lewis is also at Comic-Con promoting this. So the first issue of this series in graphic novel format, because I believe it's hardcover or if it's not hardcover, it's soft cover, but it's, you know, it's definitely a chunk because it's listed at $14.95 a pop. So I think there's supposed to be three volumes of this. And the first issue is out this week, and I would put this up. Having only read the preview, this would be my non-superhero book of the week because it deals with such an important time in our country's history, and it opens up, shines a light on the history of one of the last living civil rights leaders from that era, you know, and what he's, you know, what his struggle was like coming up and, you know, leading parts of the civil rights movement in Georgia and Alabama and down south.
Okay. So, yes, the non-big two book of the week.
Well, I just call it non-superhero because even the other books are, you know, even the other companies are doing superhero stuff. That would be my non-superhero book of the week. Do you have a superhero book of the week or just a overall book of the week?
Oh, yeah, I said we were going to start doing that now, picking things. My superhero, or just my pick, my click of the week. Is what
there
I
you
it.
Go, the click of the week.
Hold on, let me see what the book. Let me get the list of books here.
I'm presuming Infinity's not your pick of the week.
No, because nothing really. I mean, just the start of it. Thor: God of Thunder number 11. Jason Aaron's Thor is great.
Yeah, I'm torn between now. I did my non-superhero pick of the week. My superhero pick of the week is a tie between Thor and Astro City.
I got to read Astro City.
The time is now to pick it up, Tim. The time is now. Issue one, you know, there's only been three issues so far. And you don't need to know anything about the backstory to really understand it. So, but definitely Thor, you know, that was pretty much when I saw that it was the last issue, I wanted to see how it all ended, how this God Bomb story ended, and the Gore saga ended. It was pretty much the first thing I wanted to read this week. Infinity came second. So.
Okay.
All righty.
That about does it.
I'm glad to hear that there's somebody out there listening. So. You know, if anyone out there has a book that they want to recommend to us that we may not have touched on, please let us know by Twitter.
Yes, I'm at TimDOGG98.
Right, and I'm at Agent_70. Let us know if you have any books to recommend, anything that we need to maybe look at again. Maybe you don't necessarily like what we had to say about it. Maybe you want us to take a second look.
So it's been a busy last two days for us at Comic Book Chronicles, but
we are wearing down. We are wearing down. It is about that time.
I'm about ready to lay down and do some reading, which I didn't get a chance to do last night.
I have a lot of reading to do.
But yes, thanks to everyone that tuned in live. And if you're watching the replay on YouTube or on the website or on the audio podcast, once I have these uploaded in to Stitcher and iTunes. And once again, thanks for listening and watching. I'm your host, Tim DOGG, and this is Comic Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Peace. Valiant Dark One! What? Comic Book Chronicles has dopest trace chronic, yo! I'm steady tripping over them pages and dogging Adam Black. No! Yeah. Graphic or not, this is motherfucking comic book art. The man, Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, Jim Lee. Don't give a as long as
is them pages are hot, and it's written by Chris Claremont, Jeff Johns, Alan Moore, or Grant Morrison.